Welcome to Film Club. This is Jeff Yance, program director at the Loft Cinema, and I'm very happy to be here with sometimes filmmaker Heather Lottis.
Hello.
And multimedia artist Rusty Boulay Stevenson.
Hiya.
And we are Film Club, and we are ready to start clubbing with part two of our superhero discussion. Clubbing. Our heads are bobbing back and forth. So we started out last week talking about the superhero genre, starting kind of at the beginning in the 60s with the Batman TV show, talking about how it's evolved through the camp, through the Supermans, through kind of the dry spell of the 80s, up to the Batman, the Tim Burton Batmans, and then up to Buffy the Vampire Slayer, kind of as the bridge into the modern era that we're now in, which I think is safe to call the golden age of Marvel. Yes?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Definitely.
That's why we even picked 2002 as the starting date, I think, is because that's first Spider-Man movie that comes out. Marvel changes everything.
Yes. And that sort of reinvigorated the whole genre, I think, and got people really excited about superheroes on screen again at the theaters. Now, I know Heather doesn't really love Spider-Man, the Sam Raimi Spider-Man, but it was a big movie, and it did sort of change the game, and it was pretty effective. It was a post 9/11. There was a lot of talk at the time that it was post 9/11. People needed some sort of hero.
Well, and I think there are two lines of thought amongst critics as to why superhero movies have become so big. One is that we have the CGI effects that can pull it off, right? For the first time, we can make Spider-Man and it doesn't have to be animated. It can be made in 2002 to look real and be okay. The Green Goblin can look okay. It looks a little dated now, but at the time it was certainly cutting edge. And yes. The other idea is that it is post 9/11. There are these things that are bigger than people can deal with, that normal people can deal with. We're creating oil spills in the Gulf that humans couldn't stop. It would have taken Superman to stop that. 9/11 happens. We've got global warming. There are all these things that are so much bigger than what an average human can even think about almost.
Right. And superheroes are kind of reassuring in a way because we want clear-cut good versus evil, although that's not always the case with the newer superhero films.
That's right.
But just the idea that someone is more powerful than us can maybe take care of the problem, I think, is very appealing to us.
Oh, it is. It is. Especially since, like I said, these problems are so much bigger now than what we had talked about in the past.
Right. So Spider-Man. So Heather, why do you hate it?
Well, she was never a 14-year-old boy.
I was never... I just don't get the appeal of Spider-Man. I think his powers are very cool, but it doesn't captivate me. Tobey Maguire is a great actor. Like, I consider him a great dramatic actor. So for him to be a superhero was like, what the heck are you doing? Like, I feel like I think Wonder Boys was right before Spider-Man.
Right.
And then he does Spider-Man and I'm like, what are you doing? But I will say there is definitely good actors in it. There's some good acting. It's just nothing that hooked me in to get into it.
Yeah. And Rusty, you're a big fan of Spider-Man 2.
I think Spider-Man 1 and Spider-Man 2 are really good films. Yeah. They strong and it takes Spider-Man 1 to make Spider-Man 2 so strong. You've got a lot of character development that they've really worked hard to make. I really think that the character development in Spider-Man 1 leads you to care so much about what's happening with the Tobey Maguire character in 2. They're not as good. They're not in the same vein, but I almost liken it to Star Wars A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back. Empire Strikes Back, in part, is so incredible because of all the character development that happens in that first Star Wars movie. So I see an analogy there between the Spider-Mans and the Star Wars films.
Right. Yeah. And we do refer to this as the golden age of Marvel, but I think it's important to look back at the things that did not work. And I'm thinking of the Fantastic Four.
They have not
hit it out of the ballpark.
I try not to think of that.
Yes. But it's interesting why that didn't work. I mean, I guess they still made money because there were more than one of them.
There's two, the Silver Surfer.
But I think it's generally acknowledged that they were terrible films and people did not like them. And I think it's because they were maybe a little too simplistic. That was kind of my theory when I saw them. They were not of the moment in terms of the superhero kind of philosophy that we embrace now.
Yeah, no, I think that you're on to something. And in fact, what became very successful was the Batman: The Dark Knight.
Yes, that's the superhero for our time.
Yeah.
Now. Yes. And so why do you think that is? Why is the Nolan Batman so of the moment?
Why do you think? I think for a few reasons, I guess. For one, it's an ambiguous character. Batman, we sympathize with him, but he's still somebody that's at times the Bruce Wayne character is not very likable. And as the Joker points out in the second one, The Dark Knight, I mean, this vigilanteism, this is what we get. You get the Joker as a response to it.
Right.
So even the Batman character himself, the vigilante, right, that speaks to something that's going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
All yeah. around, right? Whether we should be using the death penalty.
Exactly. Yes.
Is that right to use the same force against somebody who's doing that, who's killing people?
Well, and over incarceration, like giving, you know, hard time to people who maybe just, you know, a small offense, you know, and mm-hmm. filling up the prisons and then creating even worse people because mm-hmm. of that.
Right.
So they talk, mm-hmm. they do dabble with that underneath there because that's what happens. And when Bane comes along and says, we're going to release all of these people, look at what yes. you've created. You've created this perfect city because all of the bad guys are in prison. But in right. reality, you know, that's not exactly the case. So I don't know. I think it's because Batman's such a complex character that this, and it's Christopher Nolan because he's great.
Right.
And yeah. he's obviously one of the best directors of our time.
Yes.
And Christian Bale does great. People give him a lot of trouble because of that voice. But
yes.
I still think the voice is, I got over it. By the second one, the voice was fine.
Yeah, I was pretty over it.
You know,
it
was
point.
Like, okay, yeah. this is who it is. I'm cool with that.
Bane's is another matter, but
Bane's. I was okay with Bane because
yeah,
Tom Hardy can do no wrong in my book. But
yep.
but I think honestly, I don't know if the whole trilogy would be as good as it was without the Joker. Like that performance and the
yes.
writing for his character
yeah.
and making him that. This is what happens. This is really, look at America. Look at what you're doing. This is
right.
what happens kind
right.
of thing.
Yeah.
The Iraq
that,
war subtext
right.
of it all.
Right. If that hadn't happened, I don't think it would be the great trilogy that it was.
Yeah, I agree.
You know,
and I think with superhero films, you can't discount the director's voice
yeah.
because
yeah.
I think the really great superhero films have a great filmmaker behind them. They can't just be studio driven franchise,
yeah.
you know, project for hires and be great.
Yeah.
I think that's why the you know the first couple Batmans, the Tim Burtons, were great because he put his personality into them. And the Nolan,
Richard Donner.
Or
Superman,
Richard Donner.
Superman.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So the more anonymous ones, I think that was also a problem with the Fantastic Four. There was no real great voice
no.
behind it.
Yeah.
Well, and with the Fantastic Four, I was thinking about it, and I think they sit so much on their origin story in the first one
yeah.
that it's like, okay, I get it. Like, you could have just done all of these, each of their origin stories in 2 minutes, and we'd already be into the movie. But they spend so much on that, and I mm-hmm. and on characters that we didn't know very well at the time.
Mm. That's
like,
right.
Mm. You know, none of the four of them. Chris Evans wasn't big then.
No.
And Jessica Alba wasn't that big then either. So, like, here are these people we don't care that much about, and you're going over the story. You know. So.
But Chiklis, we cared about.
He was the commissioner.
I know. We always loved Chiklis.
Yeah, he was on the Shield. You know, I like him, but he's one of my favorite characters.
Yeah. I like this.
But that was the best.
When you yeah. talk about the director's voice, too, I think, and just the characters in general, but the Scarecrow character in that and the effect that the Scarecrow uses in that first Batman Begins, that's terrifying.
Yes.
That's
yeah.
absolutely terrifying. When I was watching that, I was watching it by myself. I was an adult. It was scary.
Right.
I mean, it really got under my skin.
Yeah. It was almost a horror film in a
yeah.
lot of ways. Yeah.
yeah. And then it builds on it with the Joker and uh-huh. Bane. Yeah.
Well, the Scarecrow plays someone you're supposed to trust. Someone's supposed to help you with mm-hmm. mentally. Like, he's specifically starting out with the mentally, you know, and
right.
convincing you this is going to make you better.
Right.
That's totally freaky to, you know, a bad guy ends up being the guy that's supposed to help you.
Exactly. Yes.
You know.
And because we're sort of now living in the moment of Superman versus Batman, which I did not think was a very good film.
I refused to see it.
Okay.
I haven't seen
yeah.
it either.
I think it's interesting that the Batman character, because of his complexity and because of his backstory, is much easier to sort of put the modern kind of angst onto that character. Whereas Superman, as we mentioned earlier in our previous discussion, DC has always had a problem with the Superman character in terms of how to actually make him a contemporary character that doesn't seem totally square, totally out of date, totally patriotic.
Invincible. You can't hurt him.
You can't hurt him. Right.
And so he's a really one-dimensional character.
Yes, which is part of the struggle of the new Superman versus Batman movie, like how to make him an interesting opponent for Batman, which I didn't feel that they did. But they keep trying, you know?
Well, even in Man of Steel, which I didn't care for, I mean, it's it's good. I mean, there's nice action, but there was nothing. It's still the same problem of Superman being one-dimensional, and you wanted to see him and Lois Lane like click differently, or on some other level, or him interact with, I can't remember the bad guy in Man of Steel, but the bad guy. I actually the best part of Man of Steel was Russell Crowe's character.
Yes.
And him and trying to help his son later on.
Right.
But that was really the best thing out of it, in my, you know, like, you need more than a pretty face. Like, I don't know how it's going to take DC Comics to learn that, but you need more than a pretty face for Superman to work with us.
Well, and just superheroes in general, right? We're to a point now where Marvel has really, Batman versus Superman did well the first couple weeks, but it's bombing now.
Yes.
It tends to be tanking, and so I think you've got to do more. And so what we see working, actually, is on Netflix now, Jessica Jones, to me, is one of the most successful superheroes I've seen in a long time. I love the Jessica Jones story.
Yeah.
The subtext of abuse, I think, is really a fascinating one. Putting this strong female lead up. There's so much about Jessica Jones that Marvel is doing so right. And keeping that universe intact, too, and giving her this edge of that universe that's kind of her own. And then Daredevil does the same thing too a little bit, where they're really they're cutting out a almost not superhero, even though Daredevil has his super ability, but they're on the edge of being superheroes. Jessica Jones is a would-be superhero almost. She's got some almost powers.
She's got superpowers.
Yeah,
she's strong. She's, you know, her strength is her power.
Her strength, and she can fall. She can guide her falls.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think she's following in the footsteps of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Absolutely.
And as we talked about off mic, Veronica Mars, I think there's a little bit of that in there.
The detective, the tough-nosed, gritty detective.
Yes, exactly.
That now it's a woman doing it rather than the hard-edged man or the writer.
Right.
You know.
And I think telling that it's on television, Netflix, because I think we're still not there yet for movies.
Yeah, as a society.
In terms of having a woman be the lead in a superhero.
Well, we're not there yet, hopefully soon, with Wonder Woman, and hopefully do a good job with Wonder Woman. But
she's the best part of Batman versus Superman.
With Jessica Jones, well, so with Marvel doing an episodic series on Netflix, I think they have a huge chance to show superhero character development that they do not normally have, like in the movies. And I hope they take it with Jessica Jones. Like, I really loved the first season, but if they don't show some character development in season two with her, it's going to get old because she needs to show that she's learning things from all of the things she's going
through.
Absolutely.
Right.
And so I think that'll be like the continuing, like, okay, here we're now presenting strong female characters. Can we do this and do it successfully and continually? So we'll see with season two.
Well, and they even have a little problem with that as the season continues, right?
Yes.
Like, it's tough. The last few episodes of Jessica Jones aren't the strongest episodes.
No.
The strongest is early in, and it really is so much of the subtext is so brilliant. It's dealing with something that's so hard to understand. It's I guess the term is gaslighting, right? Where you're convincing somebody that they're kind of crazy, and that's happening. And there's so much. I mean, if you talk to somebody or read about somebody who's been abused or who's gone through stalking incidents, I mean, that's what they really feel in Jessica Jones. And there's so much of it that's so brilliant. Like, when people are giving commands, there's such an emphasis put on who's doing it and to whom they're speaking. It's really interesting, Jessica Jones, is what they're doing with it as a story.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see how it develops for sure. And I just wanted to bring up kind of an interesting subgenre. One of my favorite superhero films of the last few years was Kick-Ass.
Sure.
Which came out in 2010. And I think of it as a subgenre of superhero films in that it's about superheroes with no powers, but people who just want to be superheroes. And they're very postmodern in that sense, because Kick-Ass is about a young boy who loves comic books and he feels disempowered in his own life. So he puts on a costume and starts going out trying to be basically a vigilante. He's not really a superhero. And then, you know, meets up with Nicolas Cage, which can often go very wrong. Usually does.
In real life, too?
Yeah. And then Hit Girl, the 11-year-old girl who kind of becomes his ally. And she is also not really prepared to be a superhero. Just kind of an interesting sort of take on the genre about almost commenting on fans who want to be these characters.
Sure.
Yeah, but very dark, very, very violent. It was very controversial because she had a lot of very harsh dialogue in the film, and a lot of people were upset with that because she was 11, saying a lot of horrible things. It was almost too adult, I think, for a lot of people at the time.
Yeah, well, I think it's interesting that that's where we are going with it, right? Because that is where what we talked about is superheroes. Why do we like it? Why do we identify? And so it is. So here are real people trying to be superheroes.
Right.
Right. And Dr. Horrible does the same thing a little bit more comically, but he doesn't really have any superpowers. I mean, he's working on his maniacal laugh and he's, he's working on gadgets and stuff, right. But he doesn't seem like he's got superpowers. In fact, Captain Hammer hurts him a lot.
Captain Hammer. Yeah. Yeah. So there's a lot of wish fulfillment in all superhero films for sure. And this is just sort of making that very explicit, I think. And there was a film we talked about off mic too called Super, which James Gunn directed, who then went on to do Guardians of the Galaxy. And this was the Rainn Wilson film where he also puts on a costume because he's depressed that his wife left him. And he goes out and fights crime and recruits Ellen Page, who is a comic store clerk. She has no superpowers. They both become a crime-fighting duo. And really horrible things happen to them. It's a comedy, but it sort of plays up the fact that they are not really equipped to live the fantasy that we all want to live. And people die, and there's a lot of blood. And those both came out the same year, which is kind of interesting, which leads into Deadpool, which I think is kind of the big superhero film of the moment, really capturing the zeitgeist. Dark, violent.
Humorous.
Meta,
making fun of the genre.
Yes.
Yeah.
While being part of the genre.
He does breaks the fourth wall many times. He looks straight into the camera and says, da, 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 and, you know, that kind of
thing. Yeah.
It's rated R. We've seen rated R superhero, The Crow, Blade 2.
Exactly.
But this is where it's more going now. Before, people had said that it's too limited an audience, superheroes movies that are rated R. Mm-hmm. And so studios wouldn't take the chance. But I think we're seeing that they're seeing the light. Deadpool came out in February, a terrible time for a movie to come out.
Yep.
And it's going to beat the pants off of Batman versus Superman.
Yes.
And
it'll be remembered as sort of the classic of the genre that I think influenced a lot of movies. Because I think a lot of movies are going to take a cue and be harder, darker.
Harder edge, yeah.
More violent.
More self-aware.
Well, and Deadpool is the reluctant superhero. He doesn't want to be this good person saving people.
Right.
He just ends up being that. You know, here he has these powers and, he does, I mean, sure, in his job before pre-powers, he does help people in a way, but it's in a way to make money as his job, not because out of the goodness of his heart.
Right.
But afterwards, now that he has the superpowers, he's like the reluctant, okay. And he's not living in a mansion. He's just trying to get by, figure out what to do with this power he has.
And he's more relatable.
Yes, he's relatable. Us. He's like the guy who works at Home Depot had superpowers.
Yes.
You know, and then there's a very true love story. Like, to me, like, how he related to his girlfriend was very real, in my opinion, and humorous and not very fantastical, romantic.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing. I think all of that is appealing. Deadpool makes appealing.
Yeah.
And they make fun of, like, one of my favorite lines is he makes fun of the fact that he's interacting with two of the X-Men, and he goes to the mansion, Professor Xavier's mansion for school for the mutant school.
Right.
And he makes this joke, because it's only two of them. He's like, what? There's only two of you. Every time I come here, it's as if the movie company didn't have enough money for the rest of the X-Men. And I mean, I just like that sense of
Yeah, it's kind of biting the hand that feeds it, right. But I think we're comfortable with that now, like that kind of humor. And I felt like Deadpool was bound to happen because we love superhero movies and we're living in a time of comedy.
Yeah.
And so it was those two factors had to come together in a movie, and this was the right moment. And we're all very savvy because we've seen so many superhero movies now. We know all the cliches.
Yeah.
So
sure.
Something had to make fun of that.
Ryan Reynolds is so good at making fun of himself.
Yes. Yep.
And I mean, yeah, I can't handle it. He's brilliant at it.
Well, and superhero movies aren't going anywhere right now.
No.
They're more and more and more in the works. Netflix has more in the works. DC has more in the works. We're told there's going to be a Batman standalone movie. Ben Affleck will be starring in and directing.
Batman Broody.
Broody Batman.
I worry about that. But I mean, so where do you guys see it? Is there going to be a time? One of the other things, real quickly, and then we'll answer that question. But one thing that superheroes movies do for storytelling is it's storytelling on steroids, and so mm-hmm. that's part of the appeal. Can we keep that up, or what's the next step?
No.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
I don't think it can.
I mean, I roll my eyes every time I see another title coming out, but I still go to watch them. So
right.
There's the point where. But there has to be a point, and I don't know what that is, where we're going to say, oh, crap, it's another one. I'm not going to go. You know, there's many movies, like, say, for example, a lot of the Oscar contenders. Honestly, just waited till they were on on demand.
Right.
Or I could rent them. But I will go to the theater to watch a Marvel movie specifically. But I still roll my eyes when they say there's another one coming out.
Right.
So I don't know at what point is there that break. All right, we're not going to go to the theater anymore, because I think that's what's sure, they make a lot of money in distribution afterwards, but they make a ton in the theater, so.
Right, and I think you also have to think about the global industry for these films. I mean, these films do well because they translate well into foreign countries. Even Captain America is big overseas, because these are easy to translate stories, easy to understand. They're not necessarily culturally specific. There's a lot of fighting and things blowing up. So I think as the global market for films keeps expanding, this is going to fill that need. But eventually, it's like a society. When you reach the decadent phase, it collapses.
Sure.
That's true.
And something else rises up.
Well, and we've seen it. We've seen it with disaster movies and talking about them. We've seen there are these ebbs and flows.
Yes.
So something's going to happen. There's going to be that jumping the shark moment that...
Right.
Well, I'm curious... hindsight, we'll see, but like, curious if it's something that happens like as a society that we decide that, or something else like politically, or I think that the election coming up and how things will change maybe after that.
We'll Super see. Trump?
I don't know. Like,
yeah.
Something horrific like that.
That could be horrific.
Yeah.
You know?
Could be horrifically funny.
Right. Could be.
But I think if 9/11 kicked off the current wave of superhero films, another cataclysmic event like that could change what we need from superheroes and what we want from movies in general. And we don't know what that's going to be. I mean, that's kind of the fun of sort of predicting and forecasting and watching.
I'm just curious to see where Guardians of the Galaxy is going to go, because I think that by far is the most potential to not be as Marvel. So we'll see how that goes with the next one.
Yes. But. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and again, I think with DC, they're going to have some troubles, it looks like. It could be that starts wearing on people, too. These DC movies that don't have quite the right feel and don't have quite the appeal. It might start scaring people away from them a little bit.
Yeah, I totally agree. I feel like in DC is trying to do a Marvel Universe kind of franchise.
Yeah, they are.
They're going to really overwhelm people because there's going to be so much product out there.
Yeah.
It's going to be very difficult to sort of pull out the good films from the bad.
Yeah. Well, and so far DC hasn't done that great a job. The Christopher Nolan Batmans being the exception. I mean, but beyond that, in the last 20 years, they're having trouble.
Yep.
Well, I hope they don't mess up Suicide Squad, which was coming up.
Or Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman would be nice if it was a really great film.
Yes. And that's going to be important, I think, that Wonder Woman does well, because that's going to send a signal to the industry. Can a woman carry a superhero film or not?
That's right.
And if that film fails, I think that's going to be very bad news.
It just has to be done right.
I know. Well, let's hold out hope.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
But you know how studios are. It's not just logical thinking.
It's all bottom line. Well, interesting to ponder where we're going with superheroes. And so we'll continue to ponder that on our own, because this chapter of Film Club is drawing to a close. But we'll be back soon with more film topics. This is Jeff Yance, and I wanted to thank Heather Laris and Rusty Boulay Stevenson for being here and
thanks, guys, chatting
it up with all of us. And thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.